the left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, happy Friday, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. It's Steinberg along with you on this Friday, September 27th. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And it is time for the Eric Francis Hour. It's a Friday, which means Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. Lots to dive into with Eric from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca on today's Eric Francis Hour as he joins us right now. Mr. Francis, I saw you already on this Friday, but it's good to talk with you again. How are we doing?
I'm good, my man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the hour a little bit later on. We're going to say hello to a Calgary media legend. Excited for that conversation. But the story of the day around here and around Flames training camp is we're just over a week into it. I think the story of this Friday is Zane Parekh being sent back to the OHL's Saginaw Spirit. His first NHL training camp comes to an end. He plays two preseason games and will now head to the Ontario Hockey League for the coming season. And with, you know, the ninth overall pick and maybe the most exciting guy, the prospect Flames fans have been most excited about for a long time. That's probably the story of the day, I would suggest, my friend.
Yeah, I would think so. And you know, listen, you know, let's just put it in plain words. Like, his camp was underwhelming. He was underwhelming in the prospects tournament, even. And certainly in the main camp, and it kind of harkened back to me of Sam Hamzik, who last year was the shiniest new object, the first round pick, and he too was extremely underwhelming. Maybe overwhelmed is a better word. And in both, I think it's a very interesting comparison, because right now Hamzik is having one of the most impressive camps of anybody. And those two had dinner last night, and they talked about that. So just because this Zane Parekh is getting sent home probably earlier than the Flames expected or wanted, and the fact that he didn't have a great camp, does not mean they're disappointed in him. It does not mean that he's not going to be a star in the National Hockey League. It does not mean that this is a terrible blow to the organization. It just means that he's got his homework. He's got to go and do it. He's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. And I think more to the point, he's got to, you know, maybe think a little bit more about how the game is a whole lot different at this level, and he's going to have to change his approach to the game because of it. Like, and I'm kind of going on and on here, but like, you and I both saw that very first prospects game that he played in, and he turned the puck over in overtime and cost him the game. Not that the game, the score matters or anything like that, but I thought it was a real awesome lesson for the guy to learn, quite honestly, because he came into camp one of the most confident, borderline cocky guys that I remember seeing in this camp in a lot of years. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, and I'm not trying to be negative, but he said today when he left that he really lacked confidence. And I don't know if, you know, that giveaway had something to do with it or the fact that he just felt overwhelmed the whole time. But that's not Zane Parekh. That guy that's one of his strongest suits, that he's so confident. And he kind of lost some of that during the way. And I think it's going to take a whole year to kind of rebuild it. And I do think he'll be able to do it. So, sorry, there's a lot there. I'm kind of answering a lot of different things. But this is not necessarily a sad story. This to me is just part of the growth of a young guy.
Well, let me play just a little bit. Zane came out and spoke with us. It's funny. We were sitting in the media lounge waiting for Ryan Huska on Friday afternoon to come chat with us. Then all of a sudden, Jordan Bay just comes in, and we thought Huska was coming down. And he goes, hey, guys, can you come with me? It was only a few of us in there, but he said, guys, can you come with me? So we thought we were going down to chat with Ryan Huska, just instead of doing it in the media lounge like we usually do, thought we were just going to do it outside the locker room. Then all of a sudden, as we're sitting there waiting, the tweet comes down that Zane Parekh's been sent back to Saginaw. And 7 seconds later, Sean Kelso goes, I don't know if you guys have seen the tweet, but here's Zane Parekh. We all had seen it right at that time, so we just did the media avail immediately with Zane right there, and he was, I thought he was really refreshingly, and refreshingly is the wrong word, because I will vividly remember the rest of my career, the first conversation I had a chance to have with Zane, which was on the draft floor at Sphere Las Vegas, and I was just like, there's nobody, I've never interviewed a kid like this, an 18-year-old who is doing an interview quite like this. He, as I've said many times, it was like he was interviewing me. It was unbelievable how affable he was, how smart he was, all of it. So I'm not surprised that he came out and was honest and was accountable and was grateful and all of it. He's just a really affable and extremely likable, well-adjusted, bright young man. There's zero doubt about that. Here's just a little bit of Zane Parekh when he spoke with us on Friday afternoon.
It's hard. It's a very humbling league. But it was good. Like, I really enjoyed my time. Thought I got more comfortable as I went in. And, you know, I thought I got better as I got in too. So, you know, really happy with the time here. I'm, you know, glad I could get out of a hotel now and sleep in my own bed, which is fun. But, you know, I'm super excited to go back.
When you say it was a humbling week, like, what are some of the things that go into that?
You know, when you play against such high caliber players and you practice with all pros, I mean, you kind of see their habits and the things they do daily, and really impressive. You kind of understand how good these players are, and you know, how far away you are. So, you know, I think I got a long ways to go, and I'm excited.
So that's just a little bit of Zane Parekh when he spoke with us on Friday afternoon, Francis. Like, again, and the whole thing, he was asked about what he needs to get better at and what he did well, and he was just straightforward, upfront, and really honest about everything. I do think that this is the right call, sending him back, whether it was now or a week's time. It was the right call to send him back to the OHL. He's not ready to play 9 games, and I know that was something that I talked about earlier. Like, hey, if he's having a good camp, get him into 9 games. Well, he didn't have the type of camp that would have allowed that, and so this is the 100% right move at some point to send him back to Saginaw. And now I'm really curious as to, you listen to that and it sounds like he's got the right attitude. He said he was disappointed in his camp, but understands why this is happening and this is a positive thing, and that all of the meetings and conversations he's had with Craig Conroy and Hockey Ops and Ryan Huska and the coaching staff and Ray Edwards and the development staff have been very positive. So now he goes back to the OHL, and he's got like there's a very, very clear wish list or ask in terms of now what needs to happen. I'm fascinated to see where this goes. And as you mentioned, much like Sam Honzek, could this be a completely different conversation when Zane is 19 and back here in a year's time?
Yeah, and we'll see how he responds this year. Like, I don't think anybody doubts that he's going to go down there and dominate every bit as much as the guy who just got 33 goals in 66 games as a defenseman, as an 18-year-old defenseman. I mean, that's just insane, those numbers. One of my favorite quotes, you know, was him saying, at the end of the day, I'm still a kid and still trying to learn as I go. Like, the humbleness and, like you said, the honesty, the openness, like, this stung him a little bit. He's a little shocked, I think, that here he was, you know, halfway through main training camp and he's getting sent home. But I think he also understood that it was probably coming because he wasn't having a very good camp, you know, in terms of him being a standout or a guy who probably deserved to stay a little longer. He thought he got better every day. We saw the games. Like, he was overwhelmed in the games. The size is an issue. You know, he's listed at 6'1", 185, but, you know, he needs to pack some muscle onto that and some heft, and he knows that. He does his gaps and his, you know, working against forwards down low is a bit of a problem, moving big bodies out of the way. But, hey, two things that stuck out to me from when we were watching him in Penticton, but also in the other game we saw him here, like the skating is, it's actually a treat to watch him skate. Like he just glides effortlessly, just a beautiful stride. But the other thing is, you know, he's got that vision and that ability to find guys with passes that are elite already. And that's not going to go away.
And neither is that shot. That shot is out of, like, his ability to get that through with zip and have it get through to the goaltender. I mean, if he, a couple more inches a few times, the amount of posts that he's hit at Young Stars or here in training camp and the preseason, this guy has got, if it's not NHL ready right now, it is damn close. But I think he's got the ability to get pucks through and get zip on it while getting pucks through from the point at an NHL level too. So there are plenty of things to be excited about. You're right.
Yeah. Like this, again, humbled, but excited, you know, and that's kind of the headline on the piece I just wrote. Like that's how he left. He's humbled. It was a bit of a gut punch because he didn't expect it to be this overwhelming. But, you know, he knows what he needs to do. He's a smart kid, personable kid, and he'll deal with this really well, I think. But, you know, what's stuck with me is I asked him at one point in the beginning of Prospects Camp, like, your confidence is off the charts, and it's impressive, and, you know who you are, what you're all about. How do you guard against that being – you know, misconstrued as cocky. To me, there's a bit of a fine line there. And he said, on the ice, I know exactly who I am, what I'm capable of, and how good a player I am. Off the ice, I try to be a whole lot more humble, and I kind of downplay some of the things that I've been able to accomplish in my life. And I thought that was a really interesting answer, too. You know, he is brimming with confidence. He said he lost that confidence. That can be scary for some people, but not for this guy. He's going to find it. By the time he's back on the plane tomorrow, he'll have his confidence and his strut back, and he'll go and terrorize the Ontario Hockey League again next year to the tune of probably 30 more goals.
Yeah, like what? Imagine this guy was the CHL Defenseman of the Year and led the OHL in scoring amongst blue liners. Now he goes back. He's put on weight. He's put on 10 pounds, he told us at Young Stars, Eric. He's now going into his 19-year-old season in the OHL. Like, imagine what this guy could be capable of doing in his third season with Saginaw. He's already a Memorial Cup winner. I don't know if they're going to be back to that edge. He's actually going into his 18-year-old season. So, I mean, just imagine after 96 points as a 17-year-old, what he could be capable of doing this year, right?
Well, and as a 16-year-old, he had 21 goals. I could look that up again. I'm sure it was 21 goals.
Your memory is correct.
It's right on. Like, and I think at the time, and this one you might not be able to check as quickly, but I thought I looked it up. I think at the time that was an OHL record for a 16-year-old to have 21 goals as a defenseman. Like, that's unheard of. 21 goals for any defenseman at any age in the Ontario Hockey League or junior ranks. 20 goals for a defenseman is impressive. But, you know, he did it, you know, basically in his first full year. Like, he's just an impressive guy, and things have always come easy to him. And this might be the first time in his – well, I bet it is the first time in his career where it didn't come easy. And it was a real eye-opener. And, like, he wore that on his sleeve today when he talked about his experience. So, again, not a failed experiment. But a guy who genuinely sounded like a guy who's learned from the experience, humbled by it, and will work on it. Listen, you know, one of the things any junior player is told – you think you've been working out, you think you've been eating nutritiously, but until you see what it really takes at the NHL level, you have no idea. Like, that happens to every single player who's ever come out of junior. And, you know, he thought he'd put on enough, you know, some good weight going into camp. Look at his summer. Like, he played right through to the Memorial Cup final game. Then he had to prepare for the combine. Then he was, you know, all the hoopla around the draft. Then he had to come to Flames development camp. Then he had to play in that World National Junior Showcase. Like, he never had time to bulk up or, you know, and start to work on the things that, you know, everyone needs to work on as they come into a pro camp. So he'll have a lot more time to do that moving forward, and he'll be more mindful of it all season long as he bulks up with a new program in his hand.
Is he, Eric, is he in your eyes the number one prospect? It's funny, we had the first hour of Flames Talk on this Friday. We did a little Friday roundtable, and we didn't get to this topic, but the topic was going to be who is the number one prospect in the Flames organization right now. Is it pretty kind of cut and dried and unanimous that it's Zane Parekh, or is there a little debate in that in your eyes? I'm curious as to how you see that.
I think it's a great question, and I'll at first dodge it by saying I think he's the most exciting prospect in the organization, because that skill set and ability he has as a defenseman is so unique. I think people are really excited, you know, the comparisons to Erik Karlsson and all this sort of stuff. Like, there's nobody else in the organization that's getting those sort of comparisons, right? So I'd say he's the most exciting. Listen, in light of what Sam Hanzek's doing, you know, I guess some people could stand up and make the argument, you know, they couldn't have made it 2 weeks ago, but maybe right now you can make it saying, well, wait a second, this guy was a high first round draft pick. And, you know, given what he's done so far this year, and he's played so well in all his games, maybe he's the most exciting prospect. And is now, you know, in his second year, he's going to show it, you know, probably at the AHL level this year. And I think Brstevich is right there too. So those three kind of stand out above all of them to me. But I guess the default answer, because he's the highest draft pick the Flames have had since what, Tkachuk or whatever, Parekh is probably the easy answer to that question.
I think so too, and I think I like the way you characterize it in that exciting as well. Like, I just think there's more buzz about what this guy could be, and that's no knock on Hanzek or Gridden or Pelche or Basha or any of the other really exciting Wolf, some of the other really exciting Brstevich, so on and so forth guys they have. But when draft experts going into this year's draft are comparing the guy the Flames selected to Erik Karlsson, you're like, okay, well, that's pretty exciting. Like, it's been a while since the Flames have drafted a guy who's been compared to somebody like that. And so we don't know how close to Karlsson's Hall of Fame career Parekh will ever get, but that gives you excitement right from the get-go, and I think it's justifiable excitement. And I do think it's important to point out, and you brought up the Hanzek conversation earlier, and this is something that I really think is important, is, okay, yes, an 18-year-old got sent down to Saginaw, and he's not Connor Bedard and making the team, no questions asked out of camp. He's not Macklin Celebrini, who's making the Sharks, no questions asked out of camp. Oh, well. Like, Cale Makar wasn't immediately an NHLer. He went to college for a little bit. I mean, it takes – guys develop at slightly different rates, and if Parekh isn't ready for 2 years – 3 years, and that's what's best, and that's what's going to help him turn into the high-level defenseman the Flames hope and believe he's going to be, then so be it. There's no set timeline on this, and I think that's such, and I know you already mentioned that, I just think it's so important to reiterate that, because, you know, we do see the impatience sometimes take over narratives more often now than maybe it ever has. And so I think pointing that out is really important. Just because he didn't make the NHL this year, or maybe he doesn't make the NHL next year, that doesn't mean it wasn't the right pick or a great pick, or that doesn't mean that he's not a high-end prospect. Just guys develop at different rates.
Yeah, and we all know that it takes longer, you know,
for defensemen,
generally
yeah.
speaking, for a defenseman to kind of, you know, acclimate into the NHL. And listen, a handful of guys every decade make the jump from junior to the NHL look easy. You know, more than a handful make the jump, but I'm saying maybe a handful every decade, and you can challenge me on if you think the number's way off, they make that step look easy. And, This was, you know, clearly a guy who wasn't even, you know, ready to kind of make the step, even if it was going to be a hard one. It, you know, it just wasn't even close. So, you know, that is it. It would be unfair for someone to suggest that this is disappointing, that he's, you know, he's going home tomorrow, right? I mean, Disappointing is the last word I would use to say that. Like, yeah, would you have liked to see them come into camp and really take it by storm? Of course. But no one could have expected that or thought that was going to be the case or considered it disappointing that he's leaving early.
The Hanzek conversation's fascinating, though. Hey, like you can kind of very easily spin one into the other, knowing that, you know, Sam Hanzek a year ago, there were a lot of people disappointed his first camp ended with him clearly being sent back to the Western Hockey League. There was never any debate that he was going to go back to the Western Hockey League, and now a year later, he's maybe the biggest story at this year's camp. He's definitely one of the front runners for biggest surprises or biggest positive story here at camp, and that's 1 year later after a lot of people wondered if, oh boy, is this going to be a bad pick for the Flames, and here he is leading the preseason in scoring, which only means so much, but it just shows you that narratives can change if you give it a little bit of patience.
Yeah, 100%. And patience is such an important word for people to remember in this city as the team goes through the rebuild, retool, revamp, whatever we call it. You have to have patience. That's the whole idea of a rebuild, that you're going to take a step or two back to take a look at what you've got and guide a new sort of generation or new era of players, usher them in with confidence and with the tools that will make them successful at the highest level. That means oftentimes doing what we saw for so many years. You know, when you look back at the Detroit Red Wings back in their prime, they would keep guys in the American Hockey League for 2, 3, 4 years before they'd bring them in, even though they were probably ready. And in other organizations probably would have been rushed in too early, and who knows what would have happened to their development. But in Detroit, they had the luxury of being able to keep guys in there for 2, 3, 4 years. Like, I'm not suggesting Zane Parikh is going to, you know, maybe jump to the minors next year and play there for 2, 3, 4 years. I don't know. But patience is such an important thing here. And so, and I guarantee you in that exit meeting, and listen, Parikh said the exit meeting was nothing but positive. Of course, that's what the organization is going to exude as you leave and arm you with all sorts of, you know, some pats on the back and some critiquing. But, you know, I really believe that, you know, they are going to be patient with this guy. Why rush it? Like, did anyone really think that it would have made sense for Parikh to come and jump in and play in the National Hockey League this year? Like, how many points would he have had to have for that to even be a possibility? So, I don't know of anybody who was thinking that he was going to make the team this year. And that's fine. You know, patience isn't even in the word right now for sending him back down. It's just common sense to send him back down and let this guy play another year.
Yep. Just quickly before we pause and transition to our guest this hour, anything else that is really jumped off the page to you, Francis, in terms of, you know, this year's training camp so far and anything that has been a big story? We talked a little bit about Hanzek, Parikh goes down. Anything else that's been really eye-opening for you or anything like that?
Hanzek and Coronado, I don't want to say dominating, but, you know, putting up the points they have and being such standouts is, to me, the biggest story of camp so far. A pretty close second, though, is the fact that the line combinations that the coach, you know, agonized over, thought about, you know, rearranged all summer long, like a lot of armchair Flames fans and media types did, early on, and we're 4 games in, but early on, it appears that, you know, as it looked on paper, it's kind of looked on the ice. There is some chemistry between those guys. They are generating all sorts of points. They got 21 goals in 4 games. I know it's preseason. None of it matters. I get it. But the early indications that there could be chemistry and that maybe, you know, Huberto and Mantha could be a nice battery. They could be good battery mates for one another. And that maybe Postle still works with them. Anyway, I'm just saying up front, you know, early indications are that these lines could be really good. And the fact that those other two I just mentioned, Hanzek and Coronado, are, you know, knocking at the door, that makes it pretty interesting too. The defensemen and the combinations there are going to be fascinating to me, how they all emerge, who gets sent down, who tries to go through on waivers, all these sort of things. But we haven't really seen that kind of evolved to the point where they like the forwards have. So, sorry, I'm giving you a whole bunch of things here, but the Coronado Hanzek story to me is the number one one. And yet I still don't think there's any chance that Hanzek starts the season with the big team. I shouldn't say no chance. There could be an injury or two, and you never know. And you would like to reward a kid for the camp if he continues to have it. But Coronado is has a much bigger chance of making the opening night roster to me than Hanzek, because I think Hanzek could really benefit from a real long campaign in the AHL this year.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Last thing that I'll say is, how many times have we covered camps where there hasn't been front runners for biggest stories, and it's been like, oh, well, the team that we thought it was going to be, that's the team. Like, at the very least, there's been a lot of things that you can sink your teeth into with this one, right?
Oh, totally. And listen, just because a team is rebuilding, retooling, doesn't mean it can't be intriguing and interesting. And I think that's what's going to be the story of this season for the Calgary Flames. There are some people who I talked to, and they're like dreading, oh, it's going to be a long year. It's going to be a long year. I beg to differ. In terms of storylines, I think we're going to see so many things emerge that we never really thought about, because this team has been in win-now mode for so long that now that it's more a little more about development, I think people are going to be watching the kids on the farm and in the junior ranks a whole lot closer and getting real excited. Even if they're not playing a game in pro hockey or, you know, on the big team, there's still lots for people to sink their teeth into.
Yep. It is the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday with Eric Francis of Sportsnet. My name is Pat Steinberg here on Flames Talk, and the Eric Francis Hour is brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca along with you on this Friday, September 27th. I'm looking forward to this, and I'm going to throw it over to you, EF, because I think you should do the intro on this one. You know, we always like to bring on some really fun and special guests, and I don't say this lightly, but being the junior in this conversation, I defer to you. But I think it's fair to say that our next guest qualifies as Calgary media royalty, and that's why I think you should be the one who does the intro.
Well, I don't disagree with you. Listen, those listening who remember when the TV station was named Channel 2 and 7 might remember a show called Sports at 11, Sports at 11:30. They might recall a man named Mr. Ski. They may recall a man named Mike Lonsborough. Hmm. Mike, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Wow. Yeah, what an intro. You thought it was Elvis. And it's nice that we finally run into each other, Eric. I mean, I thought I had to go to Boston to talk to you, but it's nice that we still have a couple of sports guys in Calgary. It's a dying business and a dying breed. But I tell you, in Boston, what I liked about it was you can't go anywhere without seeing a radio broadcast on sports, a TV broadcast, all kinds of podcasts. It's unbelievable how they handle their sports, and it's dwindling away here in Calgary and most of Canada.
Yeah, it's tough time for our business, but and you're referring to you and I. Well, last time I saw you, we were in Boston. We made sure we met up, had some chowder, and had a great time catching up. But I don't just have Mike on the show because he's a legend in our minds. I have him on the show because he's pieced together something that I think is really interesting, and I think will garner a lot of interest amongst Calgary Flames fans and around the National Hockey League. You have pieced together a documentary that you've been working on for a number of years. It's called My Name is Sutter. And it's obviously a documentary on the Sutter family and the fact that they put six of their boys right through the NHL and some of them in a starring fashion. And of course, one of them being, well, almost all of them being very well known to Calgary Flames fans. Three of them coached the team here in Calgary, which is incredible. But tell us a little bit about this documentary? How long you been working on it? And give us kind of a better summary than I just did on what we're going to see when this documentary comes out.
Well, first of all, I've always had this thing in my mind was how are these guys collectively not in the NHL or Hockey Hall of Fame? I mean, when's the next? I mean, six guys make the NHL, and not just having a cup of coffee, you know, having an impact on it. You look at Dwayne, he's won four Stanley Cups. What Brent has done with two Stanley Cups and all the junior championships, and you know, Daryl, of course, coaching here with two Stanley Cups in LA. Why are these guys collectively not in the Hockey Hall of Fame? So I knew Brian from our days on Sports 11 and going out to the farm to do interviews with him. So I just called him one day. And the thing about Brian, he doesn't like talking on the phone so much. So I just finally got a hold of him. I drove out and went to the barn, told him what I'd like to do. And that's how I got the ball rolling. A couple of whiskeys later and was like, yeah, let's look at doing this. So, you know, he talked to all the brothers and we put a plan together and just started the process. And it's been interesting. I mean, these guys have got some really cool stories and you see them in a different light when you're up close and personal, you know, and away from the rink. But, you know, we had to deal with some guys at the rink too, and it was interesting to see how it all came out. And that's why I wanted to put this thing together, because I think it's a great Alberta story.
Listen, I debated writing a book on the Sutter families and Daryl for years. I'm glad you're doing this. I know a book's coming out on Daryl probably next Christmas, I believe, is the release date. But either way, you know, fascinating story. I always joke that the mom should be the one going to the Hall of Fame. I mean, having seven kids, that in itself is Hall of Fame material, let alone the fact that six of them went to the NHL. And Gary, the seventh brother, because I've written so extensively on the family, my favorite story about Gary is the fact that he ended up winning the Lotto 649 later in life, which I always thought was so amazing. But when it comes to stories from these guys, you know, is there one or two stories that sticks out? Maybe a story that you hadn't heard before while you were filming this thing?
Oh, man, there's a lot of them. But I think the funniest story, and then ask me about some of the guys that we got on the show as well that aren't Sutters, because they have some great stories. But I think the best story of them all, the funniest story of them all, and I always like the entertaining aspect of it, you know, I mean, goals and assists and all that are fine, but I like the good character stories. And so I guess Brent and Dwayne went in with their wives to watch the Mets play. And seventh inning stretch, they decided that they need to go to the bathroom. So they popped up and it was Brandon one urinal and Dwayne in another. And all of a sudden this guy with the Ranger coat shows up, and instead of using the urinal, he's pissing on Dwayne's leg. So I mean, Dwayne, knowing dog the way I know I've got to know him, you know, he's chasing the guy through and the guy's slipping in the bird. Screw you, Sutter. I hate all you guys. So then they go back, and I guess he just smells. So on the way, they make Dwayne throw the I guess they're white hush puppies. He should have thrown away just on that presence alone, but they threw him off because they smelled like urine, and they get to get rid of his designer jeans and his shoes anyhow. And so that I just laughed and heard that story.
You've got, well, we're listening to Mike Lonsborough. We're talking to Mike Lonsborough. He's just completed a documentary that's taken him several years called My Name is Sutter. You don't have a release date yet. You're shopping it around, but suffice it to say, we're going to see it at some point on one of the sports networks or somewhere, because this is something that I think a lot of interest will be drawn to. Tell me about the list of people you spoke, obviously you spoke to all the boys, but some of the other people you spoke to and some of the things that came out of those interviews.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I talking to our distributor today, and he says they're looking at a release date of Christmas. That's what he said. So that's what everyone's trying to do. And he thinks it'll be something that he'll be able to sell. Now, as far as guys go, man, there's been some great ones. I want to say this about Steve Conroy was one of them. And I'd never met Steve before we did this thing. And I tell you what, this guy, not only is he a great guy, but very well spoken, speaks highly. I mean, he played under Dwayne and Brent. And just the way he is able to describe it, you know, just a first-class guy. Glenn Sather was absolutely fantastic. I mean, we went out to Banff where he lives, and spent a day with him. And then we were fortunate enough that he, you know, took us, you know, his one regret was, like, I mean, he had a history. I mean, don't forget the bloodbaths that the Islanders and Oilers had, and each won a series, you know, a Stanley Cup against each other. And so when they go into the Canada Cup, you got all these guys hating each other. So Sather just walked in and just said, you guys are leaders, you figure it out. And they finally did. But you know, here's Brent. I think he's in a four-three. I escaped me right now, but I think three. And there's only four of them that were on those teams, and he was one of them. So, and he was Gretzky's roommate. So, and he had some interesting stuff to tell me about. You know, Gretzky was so famous that Brent would take his gear off the bus, and they'd all go through the front, then they'd have to drive Wayne around to the back. And then so Sather takes us to his dungeon, and he shows us all this stuff that he's got about the Oilers and these great pictures that not many people ever see. And so we felt honored about that. But he just absolutely loves the Southerners and just said, my biggest regret is by in Edmonton or New York. So, and I think one of my favorite guys is John Chapman. And Chappie, you know, is a scout for Philadelphia for a lot of years and really, really had a good thing going. He won the best Tier 2 team I ever saw was the Red Deer Rebels. I mean, was it the Rebels or Rustlers? Rustlers, I guess.
And, Rustlers, yeah.
Yeah, Rustlers. And they had the Twins and Brent. And they came into Prince Albert when I was working there. And, boy, they just kicked some ass. I mean, Prince Albert was big. They had this guy named Kenny Thompson who was just a big goon to just beat the crap out of everybody in that league. But these guys come in with the Setters and Cowboy Hool, who was a rodeo clown, and they just knocked the crap out of them. John Chapman was that, the coach, cowboy hat on, just, you know, old school, but he got them winning. And I was working with a guy named Morley Jagger who comes in, and the series really got heated because these guys weren't taking any prisoners. And he goes, Mike, I just got a death threat. And I said, what, some fan called you? He goes, no. Red Deer's coach, John Chapman, called me and issued a said if I talk crap about him, he's going to kill me. Nowadays, you can't say that. So no, you hear all these great stories. Yeah, and they're fantastic, you know. And, you know, so we had a lot of, you know, Ron McLean. I mean, he's got great stories. He grew up in Red Deer, and he watched all these guys develop. And he's a close friend to the whole family. So hearing his side of it, and his endorsement of the Klan, and he says why they're not in the Hall of Fame remains to be seen. The first guy they got to put in is Paul Henderson, and then the Setters.
Mike, it's Steinberg, and I'm just the whole thing. I'm just sitting back and listening and loving it. And I think that some of the stories that might get revealed and some of the things that we might see as viewers will be awesome. With honestly, the most iconic hockey family ever in the sport, and we. You know, when you talk about the different Sutter boys, you know, there's always kind of the preconceived opinions of Daryl or Brent or Dwayne or whatever. Anything, as you were going through this, anything surprise you in your one-on-one dealings with them and getting an opportunity to be around them as much as you've been over the last few years?
I knew Brian the best, you know, because of my involvement when he was coaching, and I'd been out to the farm before. They're good guys. And, I wasn't sure what I was going to get with Daryl. So we went out to the farm and, boy, different guy. Just, I was surprised at how funny he was. And I really enjoyed the time there. Just very gracious. Gave me a book. He said, read this book on Paul English, who's Willie Nelson's drummer, and just tell me what you think of it. Just keep that book because it's so good, Mike. And that's the kind of guy who was big, you know, you know, sitting there collecting Murray's money still. And will he come back in late? Who knows? You never say no to that. But I tell you what, he's pretty darn happy out there. It's a great setup. And they just keep buying more land with hockey money. And I was really impressed with the family and Chris and everybody. Oops. I guess I shouldn't be cooking when I'm talking on the radio.
At least your fire, at least your smoke inspector works. That's good. That's
yeah.
Your smoke detector.
And now I got the dogs hauling. I was trying to make Angie dinner before she got home, but scratch that. If you're listening to it, honey, pick up some KFC. I'm the only guy that can burn water.
Oh boy,
that's great.
That's good.
But yeah, I mean, it was really good going out there. And you know, Mrs. Sutter, what a sweetheart. Grace Sutter.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you know, like one thing she we used in the documentary, and I just loved it. You know, she goes, her dad was always wondering where I was at. And I said, all you have to do is find the boys. That's where I'm at. You should try that. But what a sweetheart. And the whole town still looks after her. She gets up in the morning, you know, 6 or 7, whatever, and she turns the light on, and people go by and wave at her to make sure she's all right. And, you know, she's quite a gal. I really, and just, we spent, Angie was our assistant producer on this, and we spent about 8 hours with her just going through the old pictures and the archives and everything that they have, right? And unfortunately, we couldn't use some of the tapes because they're all on VHS and just really crappy quality. But, yeah, so she was quite the gal. And you're right. She should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame for having 7 kids and 6 of them playing there. Absolutely.
Did you get the sense, Mike, like as you were going through this, like, do you get the sense that the Sutters themselves know – their place in hockey history? Like, we talk all about the legacy and all that type of stuff from the outside, but you get the sense that they understand their legacy and what they've meant to the sport?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think they do. They're humble about a lot of stuff, but I think they certainly know what they did. You take a look at a guy like Brian, and I was looking at, and I don't have his stats in front of me, but in the documentary, and I'm looking at this, plus he had 25 fights this year, that one year, and I'm going, man, if he was playing now, they'd be paying him $10 million.
Yeah.
They really would. I think Brian's big contract was $100,000, right? And, but you know, They all had that leadership thing. And even when you talk to a guy like Rich, you know, he said, I knew what my limitations were, but every year my job was to go out and take a job from somebody else. And it was a silent confidence that they had, but a belief, you know. And, and you know, the name, you know, I mean, Brian had to – the coolest story about Brian – and it, again, it's in the documentary, is when he tried out for Red Deer when he was really young, 16, 17. And his dad said, you better make the team, because if you don't, you're on your own for a couple of days because I'm combining. And
yep.
They cut him. He didn't make the team. He stayed, and he said he had enough for a sandwich. He lived in a phone booth. And he just decided, he goes, well, I can't accept this. So he went back, and he ran into the general manager, and the guy said, well, what are you doing here? You got cut. And he goes, it's not good enough. I'm going to make this team. And he did. They let him back in for a tryout, and he made the team. And the rest is history. He was the icebreaker. And then everybody else followed it. And, you know, and even a guy like Dwayne, you know, when you look at the amount of points and that he got in his final 2 years in Lethbridge. I mean, you look at that and you go, wow, who wouldn't want this guy? So the Islanders, who drafted at that time before they became one of the biggest jokes in hockey, you know, at that time with Al Arbor, you know, they drafted character guys. So they went after Dwayne, and so they got this guy
play a two-way game. You know, he had, and he was a tough guy, right? So he had to do some fighting. And, you know, he went from an all-star goal scorer and playmaker to having to be a grinder and a tough guy to make it. But for, hey, wouldn't you take his career for Stanley Cups?
Yeah.
I don't care what you have to do, win. That's what he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, listen, I there's so many different ways we could go with this because I've been fascinated with the family for years. And I remember going to Louis when Louis passed away. I went to his funeral and it was like a who's who of the hockey world. And, you know, I've been up to the Sutter, the Darryl's Ranch, and, you know, it's hockey history. My question is this: of the six guys, and since you kind of dug into all their careers, who do you think was the best player of all of them? Because to me, I have a very strong opinion on who I think it is, but I'm curious, you know, you probably looked at old tape and obviously looked at their numbers. Who do you think was the best player of the six?
Well, they all brought something different to it. They all had that work ethic and they all had that desire not to fail and to win at all costs. But I do think, Brent was kind of the, I think he was the best player. I think Brian was the toughest. And as Butch Goren called him, he's the meanest SOB he's ever played against. And so I think Brent overall, and you know, Ronnie had a lot of good skill too, right? I mean, and they're all very smart hockey-wise, right? So I would say, you know, Brent, and I would also say, you know what Brent's done in business too afterwards, and his coaching and, you know, playing in all those Canada Cups and winning the Memorial Cup too, buying that franchise and all of a sudden turning that into a winner as well. I think it's just a success story all around. So easy answer to me is Brent as the player.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you points-wise and leadership-wise, but all the kids were stud, star, junior players, and they all went about being an NHL pro in a different way, and they adapted their game, and they did whatever it took to be successful. And that meant being different things to different teams. But the story I always remember about Brent, you know, I was at the 87 Canada Cup. I was a kid, 17-year-old kid, watching that game at Cops Coliseum, the greatest sporting event I've ever seen. Game three, Canada was down by a couple goals after the first period to the Russians. And it was a third-line mucking role that Brent Sutter was playing that turned that entire game around. And that just says it all. He played a mucking role when it mattered most, even though he was a scorer and a great player. And I just thought that almost symbolizes what the Sutters are all about. Whatever it took, they could do it or would do it or at least try to do it. They'd die trying. And that's kind of how I'll always remember them as players. So, listen, the documentary, it's called My Name is Sutter. You think it's coming out close to Christmas? When it does, we'll certainly let the listeners know. Mm-hmm. But, Mike Lonsborough, we really appreciate you coming on, telling us a little bit about it, and getting us excited for what we're going to see come Christmas. So thanks, my man.
One thing before I go, and I don't know why I said that, but, you know, sometimes when you're a big mouth like we are, the three of us, and you have to ad lib, sometimes it doesn't always come out the best way. I said Steve Conroy, and I meant Craig Conroy, who was excellent. So any Flame fans that said, yeah, it doesn't even know who the GM of the Flames is, my apologies, because he was outstanding, and I hope this guy turns things around for them, because he's certainly a first-class guy. And yeah, thank you, yeah, too. And I'm glad we got at least two guys left in the media here.
For now.
For now. We'll shut out the lights when it's over.
One eye open.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, boys.
Thanks,
my thank
man.
You. I
thanks,
really
Mike.
Appreciate your
awesome.
Time, and we'll stay in touch. Okay. Thank you.
We will.
That's Mike Lonsborough, by the way. Calgary media legend, Sports at 11 and more. The documentary that is coming out, My Name is Sutter. It sounds awesome. And I'll tell you this much, EF. You don't have access to it as I do, but the text line lit up on that one, just hearing Lonsborough
yeah,
on.
Figured.
And text line loved it. The stories and lots of Mr. Ski references and all that type of stuff. So pretty neat. That is truly Calgary media royalty. That was pretty neat. Thanks for doing that today. That was neat.
Yep. No, I was glad to have him on. And hey, listen, if anyone wants to see the trailer for there's a 2-minute trailer to kind of whet your appetite on this documentary. I put it out on Twitter earlier today, so you can go to that on YouTube as well. And so you just get a tiny taste of what it's about. But it's just dripping in history, nostalgia, storytelling. And, you know, he didn't even mention all Bob Nystrom, Butch Goring, Ron McLean, Mrs. Sutter, Gary Sutter, Glenn Saylor. Like, it's a who's who of the hockey world who's also on there telling great stories. So looking forward to that. But thanks. It's always a good chat every Friday, my man. Thank you. And I will see you down at the Dome tomorrow for game number 5 of the preseason.
You sure will. Thanks, EF. We'll talk tomorrow, hey?
Cheers, buddy.
Eric Francis wrapping up, and that starts to wrap us up on the Eric Francis Hour. It's brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.